Rodeo here. 88.3 FM, WRCT, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Hello, I'm Dr. Ruth Westheimer. And if you listen to WRCT Pittsburgh, you know that in most cases, size does not matter.
gift to you is my goodbye. It's ugly truth, it's pretty lie. Position is it? Everybody knows. Thank you.
might don't know where the health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Asthma affects 25 million people nationwide, and every day 10 people die with it, with African American women and children being most at risk. Early warning signs include coughing, especially at night, or with exercise and wheezing. Almost all asthma can be effectively managed with a good action plan. So talk with your doctor today, and for more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
rodeo here, 88.3 FM, WRCT, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Lee Reynolds, you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, an email I got this week tells me, and I'll quote, "The radical left is up in arms about Doge. Just think about it. Doge has exposed billions in wasteful spending and is rooting out fraud and corruption at every turn. They're making the government work for the people of this great nation once again, as the founders intended. And that is why the left simply can't stand Doge." End quote. The ask is that I fill out a survey that represents our once-in-a-lifetime chance to slash the bloated, woke, and wasteful policies in the federal government. Thank you and God bless, Speaker Mike Johnson, paid for by the NRCC and not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. Reports are that Elon Musk is leaving government, going back to make Tesla great again or something. But if that's true, why did I get this weird, sad email? We'll talk about how to miss Musk when he won't go away with Jeff Hauser, executive director of the Revolving Door Project. Also on the show, the New York Times has its stories on the Boeing non-prosecution agreement in their business section, suggesting that whether planes drop out of the sky is mostly a concern for investors. A huge corporation paying money to dodge criminal charges is evidently not a general interest story, and the families and friends of the hundreds of people dead because of Boeing's admittedly knowing malfeasance, they're just another county heard from. If you want reporting that calls crimes crimes, even if they're committed by corporations, you're going to need to look outside of corporate media. We'll hear about Boeing from independent journalist Katja Schwenk. That's coming up, but first, a quick look back at some recent press. California public schools are the latest target of Donald Trump's Department of Justice, which is ramping up an investigation into high school sports after a transgender girl qualified for 3 track and field events at state championships. The DOJ is alleging that the California Interscholastic Federation, allowing transgender girls to compete in girls' sports, might violate Title IX, which prohibits discrimination based on sex. As Olivia Riggio writes for Fair.org, the New York Times covered this latest right-wing attack on trans youth, like they do, as a political football that somehow has nothing to do with the people whose lives are at stake. Because no trans people are heard from. The Times did quote 4 government officials against the participation of trans girls in girls' sports, and Harmeet Dhillon, Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, who said it is perverse to allow males to compete against girls, invade their private spaces, and take their trophies. After that, inflammatory misgendering language was left unchallenged, Times readers got California Governor Gavin Newsom talking to public intellectual Charlie Kirk, calling out trans athletes' participations in female sports as deeply unfair, and a California lawyer saying that Title IX means discrimination on the basis of sex is illegal and immoral. All of that without noting that courts have interpreted Title IX preventing discrimination on the basis of sex as also protecting trans students. The piece cited only one statement from a coalition of LGBTQ advocates, noting that sports organizations were actually following inclusive, evidence-based policies that ensure fairness for all athletes, regardless of their gender identity, and noting that undermining that now for political gain is a transparent attempt to scapegoat a child and distract from real national challenges Americans are facing. So, yes, Pride Month is kicking off, and the New York Times is releasing a 6-part podcast about medical care for trans youth. Critically important, given the breathtaking assault on trans rights by the Trump administration, which has issued at least 6 anti-trans executive orders in its first months. Across the country, 920 bills aimed at trans people have been introduced in the first half of 2025. But as Olivia Riggio and Julie Holler note, the Times documented anti-trans bias, and the fact that reporter Azeen Gureshi is responsible for much of their previous problematic coverage and is centrally involved in the podcast means that trans activists are girding for the worst. Gureshi has been criticized for misreporting the experiences of trans minors and their families, misrepresenting study findings, and promoting unsubstantiated claims that in part contributed to the closure of a St. Louis youth gender clinic. The podcast teaser offers a glimpse of what's to come. Back and forth quotes from trans people and those seeking to take away trans kids' health care. Plus, some troubling quotes like this one. Quote, if the treatment is barred, some kids will suffer because they can't access the treatment. If the treatment is allowed, some kids will suffer who get the treatment and later wish they hadn't. And then the question becomes, how does the court choose which group? Close quote. It's not clear who the speaker is, but the sense the listener gets is that these are equal harms. The reality is, regret over gender-affirming care is extremely low, and such care has been shown to greatly reduce the alarmingly high suicide rates among trans youth. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group Fair. A bruised Musk leaves Washington, the New York Times told readers. USA Today said Musk leaves Trump administration, capping his run as federal government slasher. The Washington Post said his departure marks the end of a turbulent chapter. While most outlets acknowledge that the impacts of Musk's time as special government employee are still in effect, and even that many of the minions he placed are still hard at work, the focus was still very much on the great man. What drives him? What will he do next? Rather than on the structures and systems whose flaws are highlighted by the maneuvers of Musk and the so-called Department of Government Efficiency. Our guest says now is not the time to take our eye off the ball. Jeff Hauser is the executive director of the Revolving Door Project. He joins us now by phone. Welcome back to Counterspin, Jeff Hauser.
Great to be here.
Well, I feel as though we spoke recently because we spoke recently. But for the press corps, there's a new story. To imagine, as some headlines suggest, that Elon Musk has packed up his toys and left town, so some kind of chapter is concluded, that's not just inaccurate, but rather worrisomely so, don't you think?
Absolutely. Elon Musk brought dozens of people with him to Washington, D.C., to government. They were very homogenous in the sense that none of them were qualified to work at senior levels of government. And they all were motivated by a hatred for public service and a hatred for government protecting ordinary people from the whims of corporate America. And they remain in government right now. They are implementing Musk's agenda, which happens to be pretty similar to Russell Vogt's agenda, which happens to be very similar to Project 2025's agenda, which was an agenda that Donald Trump disavowed, but is obviously governing with.
Well, talk about Russell Vogt a little bit. I mean, I know he's head of the Office of Management and Budget, but what else do we need to know about him in this context?
Russell Vogt is sort of like Elon Musk, if Elon Musk has been paying attention to politics for a couple of decades, mm-hmm. and minus the allegations of ketamine usage. Russell Vogt knows what he is doing, brings a unique combination of hard right social views and hard libertarian views on economic policy. He is the personal marriage of all the sort of worst tendencies within the Republican coalition, and he knows what he is doing. He had a senior role in the Trump administration go around one. He thinks that they underperformed, that they could have attacked government more. They could have made a country even freer and more supportive of the richest, most rapacious corporations. And he's determined that they succeed at doing so again. And he spent a four-year interregnum planning in exquisite detail how to bring about the devastation of American government, the sort of professionalization of the American government that had been the project for more than 140 years since the Pendleton Act and the rise of the civil service in the early 1880s.
ProPublica revealed some speeches Vogt gave a little while back, and touching on Project 2025, which he's an architect of, goes right to what you're just saying. Part of myriad things they want to do is revive Schedule F, which would make it easier to fire large groups of government workers who right now have civil service protections. But what struck me was the quote. This is Vogt, quote, "We want the bureaucrats to be traumatically affected. When they wake up in the morning, we want them to not want to go to work because they are increasingly viewed as the villains. We want their funding to be shut down so that the EPA can't do all of the rules against our energy industry because they have no bandwidth financially to do so." Close quote. I have a feeling if that quote were put in front of people, it might provide some light on the project here.
Absolutely. It was hiding in plain sight. Mm-hmm. They told us what they were going to do, but Donald Trump disavowed it. I mean, Donald Trump said, "I'm not going to run on Project 2025. This stuff is so extreme. It's crazy. Obviously, I'm not going to do it." But they're doing it note for note. And I can tell you, as somebody who not only does politics, but lives in Washington, D.C., when you're in the community, there are a lot of traumatized public servants who really deeply believe in the mission of their agencies, people who could have made a lot more money and had easier, more comfortable lives outside of government service, but are in government for the right reasons. And they are genuinely traumatized right now. And they have a lot of capacity to do good in the world that was underappreciated. Now they are being radically disempowered. And it's going to take a very long time. It's going to take a lot of great energy to ever rebuild this government that Russell Vogt, Elon Musk, and Donald Trump are destroying.
I think it's so interesting how you say that even though this Trump administration is acting out the points of Project 2025, the story is still, oh, he disavowed it. And it really highlights the way media have difficulty focusing on what's happening when they're so busy listening to what folks are saying and what other folks are saying about what those folks are saying. But what we really need them to do is to track actual actions.
Absolutely. It would be great if the media were more focused on letting people understand what it is that the government can be doing, ordinarily does, is doing, and should be doing. I don't think people have a good understanding of government. Even political junkies who can tell you a lot about Nebraska's second district and, you know, the chances of Democrats taking back that House seat and how that one electoral vote might influence the Electoral College in the presidential cycle. People who know that level of minutia can't really tell you what the Office of Management and Budget does. Mm-hmm. They almost certainly can't tell you what OIRA, which is a subset of the Office of Management and Budget that focuses on regulatory issues, does. They wouldn't have been able to tell you about what the civil service does or the role of the EPA as law enforcement against corporate criminality. They don't know these things. The media does not convey these things. And so if there is an abstract threat about government bureaucrats, even political junkies don't understand necessarily what that will mean for their real lives. And I think it's going to become, unfortunately, painfully clear in the coming years what that means. But the process is not immediate, and it's incumbent upon the media to, as things go wrong, show the causality, show how these bad things were made much more likely to occur by Trump's actions, by Musk's actions, by Vogt's actions, by their disdain for public service and their embrace of corporate titans being able to do whatever they want to do.
Well, I want to just ask you finally what Revolving Door is up to, but I just saw this quote from AP, which said, Musk has succeeded in providing a dose of shock therapy to the federal government, but he has fallen short of other goals. And we're supposed to take away that providing shock therapy to the federal government is somehow benign or necessary or, you know, a good thing. It's remarkable. But let me ask you finally what Revolving Door is up to and how you hope journalists and others can use the tools and the information that you're providing.
Yeah, I think the quote really actually gets at a lot of what a Revolving Door project is up to, because we do, you know, two types of work. One is pushing back on Trump, on creeping authoritarianism and rapacious oligarchs destroying the government so they can pillage society. So we do that work, but we also fight back against neoliberals within the Democratic Party. We're a nonpartisan organization, and we attack neoliberalism in all of its many forms. And the idea that government required shock therapy, that there were too many people working in government, even though the number of people working in government is the same as it was two or three generations ago when America's population was half of what it currently is. But the notion of this is a nonpartisan idea that government required shock therapy, that is the marriage of Democratic neoliberals and Republican neoliberals. And that is what allowed Musk and Doge and Trump to happen. It's this belief that things really were broken, that there's some legitimacy to the concept of Doge from the jump. No one should have ever validated the idea of Doge or talked about, here's my vision for what government efficiency pursuits would happen. Because Musk's goals were not to cut government spending. In fact, Silicon Valley wants way more financial support for their artificial intelligence data centers and the like. They want subsidies for all sorts of tech projects, and they want a bigger military industrial complex that is more heavily dependent on Silicon Valley. So they want lots of spending. They just want it on their priorities. They want to attack government workers because those government workers enforce the rules that limit and constrain corporate oligarchs. So that's what they wanted. They did not want to reduce the deficit. And taking seriously the notion that Musk was some sort of deficit hawk is part of the inanity of American political coverage. And I'd like the media to be less credulous about people who have obvious economic stakes in public policy and pretending that the rhetoric that they deploy, especially when they're known liars, is something that we should take seriously.
And so the work you're doing is tracking kind of the ins and outs of what these predations have meant and what they could mean and how to stay on top of them.
Yes, we are cataloging under our Doge Watch feature the ways in which Trump and Musk are attacking the ability of government to protect ordinary people. And we're also monitoring separately, we have a website, hackwatch.us, how ostensible Democratic-aligned center-left neoliberal pundits, people like Ezra Klein and Matt Iglesias and Derek Thompson, are making things easier for corporate oligarchs, are carrying water for Silicon Valley, and are pursuing neoliberalism, because we're against neoliberalism in all forms.
All right, we'll end on that note for now. We've been speaking with Jeff Hauser from the Revolving Door Project. Jeff Hauser, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There's no need for me to rewrite the AP story on how Boeing and the Justice Department got together and decided no crime was committed when Boeing 737 MAX planes crashed in 2018 and 2019, killing 346 people. So I'll just cite it. Quote, Boeing did not tell airlines and pilots about a new software system that could turn the plane's nose down without input from pilots if a sensor detected that the plane might go into an aerodynamic stall. The MAX planes crashed after a faulty reading from the sensor pushed the nose down and pilots were unable to regain control. After the second crash, MAX jets were grounded until the company redesigned the software. The Justice Department charged Boeing in 2021 with deceiving FAA regulators about the software and how much training pilots would need to fly the plane safely. The department agreed not to prosecute Boeing at the time, if the company paid a $2.5 billion settlement, including the $243.6 million fine, and took steps to comply with anti-fraud laws for 3 years. Last year, federal prosecutors said Boeing violated the terms of the agreement by failing to make promised changes to detect and prevent violations of federal anti-fraud laws. Boeing agreed last July to plead guilty to the felony fraud charge instead of enduring what could have been a lengthy public trial, close quote. But now that we're up to speed, here's a reporter whose work, unlike that of AP, is not headlined with a little ticker telling you how Boeing stock is doing. Katya Schwenk is a journalist whose work appears at The Lever, The Intercept, and The Baffler, among other outlets. Welcome to Counterspin, Katya Schwenk.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Well, I used that long quote for information, but I do hope that listeners know that those Indonesia and Ethiopia 787 crashes weren't the start of all of this. And I know that listeners will have clocked the bit about Boeing agreeing to plead guilty if it would spare them a lengthy public trial. You know, so I know if I kill a few hundred people, I don't think I can say, well, yeah, I did it and I knew I was doing it. But here's some change from my bottomless bucket of money, because otherwise I might have to lose my whole summer in court, you know. I can't help but be startled at the reception to this agreement, as though it were actually, as a DOJ spokesperson said, as though it actually, quote, provides finality and compensation for the families and makes an impact for the safety of future air travelers, close quote. Is there any indication of that happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer to that is a pretty resounding no. I mean, the families do not support this agreement. They had wanted to see Boeing face a trial, face some kind of criminal penalty, face real accountability after the crashes. The families of these people who died in the planes, they have been fighting for years and years to get some small measure of accountability in court. And it looked like they might actually see that when the Justice Department had given Boeing a sweetheart deal under the first Trump administration. Like, it was walked back last year. It seemed like Boeing might actually plead guilty. And then this has basically completely undone all of that, you know, the fine in terms of, if you think about how much money Boeing has, it's somewhat negligible. It includes credit for what they've already paid in this case. So, you know, I think it's pretty disappointing for everyone who wanted to see Boeing face real public accountability.
Well, what is a non-prosecution agreement, which is coming up a lot in this? What does it do? What does it not do?
Basically, the Justice Department has agreed to drop all criminal charges against Boeing and has said that so long as Boeing pays this fine, invests more in its, you know, quote-unquote compliance programs, it will not be moving forward with any criminal charges. It's dropping the case, basically. And this is different from what had been the previous sweetheart deal. It's like even better than the first sweetheart deal, which was deferred prosecution agreement, which basically meant we'll wait and see if we're going to prosecute you. We'll see if you comply, if you invest more in your anti-fraud programs. In this case, in what the deal that was just released today, this is like they're not even going to continue monitoring that. Right? It's just like total blank slate. Charges are gone.
And, you know, the idea that if you just throw enough money at it, it's not a crime, I just know how weird that lands with everybody who is understanding that that just means if you're rich, you can do what you want. Or if you're a corporation and you have enough money, you can commit a crime and we won't call it a crime because you can pay. It sounds wrong.
Yeah, this is like the Trump administration approach your white-collar crime and holding corporations accountable, which is part of a longer-term trend in the U.S. government for, like, decades. But corporations, even when, in this case, you know, there's, you know, many, many people died, right? But often are given deals that allow them to just pay a big fine, say they've implemented reforms and get away scot-free. And there was a moment where it felt like Boeing might, you know, might not. There's so much public scrutiny. There's so much pressure on the DOJ to actually hold them accountable. And instead, we're seeing that.
Well, I just talked with Jeff Hauser from the aptly named Revolving Door Project, and it seems like cronyism and, you know, it's a big club and you ain't in it has been a part of your focus as you've reported this story out for some time now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Boeing spends quite a lot of money lobbying in Washington. There are people that go into roles at the COJ or the FAA that have previously worked for Boeing. It's very much the revolving door at work. And they do quite a lot of business with the federal government. And so we've seen under the Trump administration, they have granted various giveaways to Boeing. They facilitated a massive deal with the government of Qatar. They gave Boeing a huge contract to work on fighter jets. You can really see how close the relationship is between Boeing and people at the highest positions of power in our country. And I think that, yeah, definitely that's explaining a lot of what's going on. And I think the more people that we can have paying attention, not only to Boeing, but again, to these sort of mechanisms, levers of power, challenging, you know, I mean, you mentioned the stock price of Boeing is often the focus of a lot of media attention. I think there are many people who would say, you know, it's not good that you have a company responsible for all this air travel that's totally ruled by Wall Street, you know, and so I think that really needs to be the focus of reporting moving forward. How is Boeing buying influence? Who are they answering to? Is it their engineers? Is it the flying public? Is it travelers? Or is it their shareholders?
Well, and just finally, if folks do pick up a paper today and look for a story on Boeing, they will likely see a story about how China is scrambling to make something as good as a Boeing plane. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the way Boeing is showing up in the media right now. It's almost as if the story, it's done. That was yesterday. And now we're moving on to this corporation that has these deep contracts, military contracts, government contracts. Mm-hmm. If an individual killed hundreds of people, the story wouldn't just die because we thought, oh, they're going to go on and do something good, maybe. You know, it's a malfeasance on journalism's part, I feel.
Absolutely. I mean, it sends a message, right? It sends a message that you can do something like that and we'll move on and we won't pay attention. So, yeah, I totally agree.
Well, we've been speaking with journalist Katja Schwenk. Her work on Boeing can be found at The Lever and at Jacobin and no doubt elsewhere. Thank you, Katja Schwenk, very much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, a national media watch group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find shows and transcripts on our website, FAIR.org. The show is engineered by Michael Cherry. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin. Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, Taylor Swift, Bruce Springsteen, Beyonce, and Oprah are among the entertainers in Donald Trump's all caps sights for, it would seem, endorsing Kamala Harris in the election. And or maybe saying something unflattering about him or his actions, which in his brain and that of the minions who've chosen to share that brain constitutes an illegal political contribution to his opponents, wherever they may lurk. At a moment when politicians who swore actual oaths are throwing over even the pretense of democracy or public service or basic human decency, many of us are looking to artists to be truth tellers and spirit lifters, to convey maybe not so much information as energy, the fearless, collective, forward-looking joy that can sustain a beleaguered people in a threatening time. There is a deep history of protest music and music as protest, and our guest is very intentionally a part of that. Tom Morello is a guitarist, part of Rage Against the Machine, Audio Slave, Prophets of Rage, and the Night Watchmen, among many other projects. His music has always been intertwined with his activism and advocacy for social, racial, and economic justice.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.